get the proper help. That's it for today's show. Hope you enjoyed it. Please go ahead and send me questions if you have them.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the internet. The show airs the first Saturday of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, go to her website, qualityplusconsulting.com.
This is WGTDHD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Guida Brown, former executive director of the Hope Council, Dr. Steve Brown, retired professor of educational leadership and school law, Dr. Karen Sconsert, chair of the education department and associate professor at Carthage College, Dr. Jonathan Shaler, professor of communications at UW Parkside, and Stephanie Skilba, Vice President for Community and Government Relations at Gateway Technical College. And now, here's today's moderator for Education Matters.
Good morning. Welcome to today's edition of WGTD's Education Matters. I'm Guida Brown, one of the program's rotating hosts. My guests today are Cheryl Hernandez, the Executive Director, and Cassie Christensen, the
Program coordinator
from the Kenosha Literacy Council. And today we'll be discussing just their programming and things about them. So welcome, ladies. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
All right. So actually, I want to start out with your student anthology. I believe I got it in the mail, and it really piqued my interest about what the students are doing. So tell us about it.
Sure. The Student Anthology is a project that we do every year with the students for, I think, 21 or 22 years. 21 years.
Wow.
And so each year we get the students together and the volunteer tutors, and they develop stories, and we put them together into a book. And the stories have different themes, so we've been doing different themes each year. So this year, the themes had to do with helping hands, so volunteer efforts, traveling adventures, and childhood memories. But then other years, we've done celebrations or tell us about your country or share about your family. So different themes that they can write about.
And you select the themes?
Mm-hmm.
And the volunteers also have an opportunity to write the stories?
So the volunteers write stories with the students.
Okay.
So they help the students develop their stories.
And do all the students write a story? Or, I mean, how does that get achieved? Because it's not that huge of a book.
Right.
And I know you have a lot more students in a year than this. But so tell me about that.
So not all of the students write a story. We try to get many of them to write stories. So
you
that
encourage
have
all of them to,
yep,
and some of them just
mm-hmm.
don't or yeah. don't feel qualified. Or
and so
whatever.
We do this project, too, in the fall. So we're usually working on it August, September. So the students who are with us at that time might be different than students who are with us at other times of the year.
Okay.
But we encourage many of our students to do it. I know for our 20th anniversary, we had some alumni come and write stories. We included their stories too, which was kind of fun.
Cool. I just love this. I was looking through it, and you know, there's a story of a woman whose husband died. They're just really compelling stories. And I know I've been at enough of your events when people talk, when the students talk, and it's just so fantastic. So I guess maybe people don't even know what the Literacy Council does. I know that Racine's and Kenosha's are a little bit different. So tell us about the Kenosha Literacy Council. Your mission, who you serve, how you serve,
sure,
where you serve.
Yeah. So the Kenosha Literacy Council is a nonprofit here in Kenosha that works with adults who are learning to read, write, and speak English. So we serve about 500 adult learners every year with the help of 200 volunteers. Those students are from about 40 different countries around the world each year. So it's a very diverse place. And I think it's fun for the volunteers to get to learn about students from all of those different countries, and it's a great experience for the students too. We have many different kinds of programs, so maybe I can let Cassie talk a little bit about the program since she's the program coordinator.
Yeah, so with our students, we develop educational plans with them, and then we match them depending on their goals and things to the different programs that we offer. So we have a variety to meet all the learners' needs. Some of them are more tutoring, focused on, you know, grammar and reading and writing skills, and then other classes are maybe small group classes that are offered so students can practice their conversation skills. So some of those things might just be a conversation session, right? They come in and practice speaking English. Other things might be more targeted to experiencing the community. So a couple of new really great programs that started as our adventure class. So they practice English while they go out and experience different places in the community. And we found that that one's been really beneficial because the students have tried things or been places that they've never been to before and always...
Give us some examples.
Sure. This last year, we did a bowling outing with them. And right away, we knew that none of them had ever been bowling. And so they all wanted to do it, and now they're going to go back and do it again.
Oh, how fun.
We've done hiking out at the different parks, so Pringle and Petrifying Springs. Kayaking is a real popular one.
Where do we kayak?
Right on the harbor here.
Oh, okay.
With the Kenosha Sailing Center?
Yeah.
Kenosha
yeah.
Sailing Center, yep. So when they started renting kayaks, we took our students down there, and that's a really big one where we often hear, oh, I'm going to bring my family back next weekend and do it again. So it's a really great way for them to not only learn English, but learn about the place where they live so that they can be more involved and get their families involved.
I had a question for you about, you mentioned, Cheryl, that they change over the year. You have about, you said 500 learners. So how long generally does somebody stay engaged with you?
It absolutely depends on the student and their goals. Some students come in and they come for a few months and they've moved on to the next thing. They're ready for the next thing. They've gotten their job or whatever they were working towards. But on average, we say about 6 months.
Okay.
And some students are with us longer. If they come in and they're really kind of at that beginning level, then they might stay with us longer.
So where do the students come from? I mean, I don't mean country-wise, yeah. But how are you getting referrals for them?
Yeah, so a lot of it is word of mouth, right? So family and friends. My aunt came here, my brother came here, and they bring their family and friends when they come to the country, but we also work pretty closely with Gateway Technical College and their ELL program that they have here, and so we share students, ELL, English Language Learner, work closely with them, also with the Kenosha Unified School District, and we do open houses and parent nights and things. And we try to make sure other community organizations know about us and our services so that they can refer students too. Oh.
And so 500 students a year and 200 volunteers.
Yep.
That's huge. So how do you get your volunteers? How do they come to you?
We do a lot of promoting. We use the newspaper, of course, and we use Facebook. And then a lot of our volunteers actually hear about us through community events and things that we do, too. So if they've heard about us, you know, from a friend, or just, for example, when we released our anthology last year, we got a few volunteers that came in and they didn't know about us really before, but they came to this event and then signed up for volunteering after that. So lots of different avenues to find volunteers, but we're always looking for more. So we're looking forward to our upcoming volunteer training, which is scheduled for May 10th. So if people are interested, they can come and to an information meeting just to learn a little bit more about a volunteer experience.
So how would they contact you if they wanted to do that?
Yeah, so they can either call us. Our phone number is 262-654-7323, or they can send an email to me, which is cassie@kenoshalit.org.
Okay. And so let's say I come to this, or I can't attend this, but I want to be a volunteer. What does that volunteer training look like?
So you would just contact us, and we can put your contact information on a list to reach out to you in the future. Volunteers are always welcome to come in and just visit, see what a tutoring session looks like with us. and then take the training later. So there's a lot of opportunities to get involved right away. Or you can come to an information session and then take the training later. Training is generally two sessions. So where we learn about adult theory learning, the theory of adult learning, and then also how to use our materials.
So. And how many hours is that?
A total is about 14 hours.
Oh, okay. So it's not. I mean, and so how long do your volunteers stay with you? I mean,
we have some that have stayed with us for a very long time. We actually have quite a few who have been with us for 10 or more years, which we're very, very thankful for.
Yeah.
So we hope that our volunteers stay with us long term, obviously. Mm-hmm. But we have others that college students or high school students that need service hours. And so maybe they're just with us for the semester.
Oh, okay.
So that's the case as well, but many of our volunteers stay with us for quite a while.
So I know one of the other things that you've done is a book club, and I attended one of the book clubs because you read a book that I was so interested in, and I was. So tell us about the book club, because that's got to be a great place. I want to learn Spanish, and I took Spanish through high school poorly, right? And then I used Babbel or one of those, not Babbel, but the other one, where I tried and tried and tried, and we went to Mexico, and I said to a person, ¿Dónde está Nuevo? And he started speaking to me in Spanish, and I was like, dude, I just said, like, where is new?
Yeah.
Because I can't speak Spanish, right? And he starts, like, going on. I was like, "What? I can't speak Spanish. Like, that's all I could say to you." Because I was asking where the new building was because it was an old, rundown hotel that I knew they had rebuilt. So it's really scary, right? It's really scary to learn a language and know that you're not comfortable with it. And so the book club, I love that idea. Number one, I read a book, right? I read a whole book in this other language, which, you know, I keep thinking, I need to do that with first grade Spanish books. But, and then to be able to discuss it. And I think so many people, I mean, how many people are in book clubs that they're not really discussing the book very much, right? They're drinking wine, having snacks, and talking about what you watched on TV, which is fine if that's your book club. I happen to be in a book club where we discuss the book like we are. And I love that book club. It's the Kenosha Women's Network, but I love that the idea of discussing a book in depth, like not just the superficial story aspect of it, but how was it written? How was the character development? And so I think that was really such an eye opener for me, but I'm sorry. So go on. Yeah. So you tell me what your book club's like, because I just love that idea. I absolutely love that you guys do that.
It's a huge challenge for our students. And, they are really excited and proud of themselves when they've finished a
Amen.
Book.
Amen. They should
be. It's a huge accomplishment for them. And for a lot of them, when they are in the book club for the first time, it's the first time they've read a book in English. And they're very excited about that. And we have students now who have been with us for a few books. And so then they say, oh, I've done this book and this book. And they have their checklist going of books. Right now, they're reading Homegoing. And we're getting ready for our book discussion next week. I think it's coming up for Homegoing. And so they're really busy getting prepared for that. But the students work very, very hard because they're traditional books that you and I read for our book club. So it's a big challenge for them vocabulary-wise, but also just thinking about the book and learning from the book, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a lot of fun because we get to try a lot of different, you know, genres, if you will, of books, so things that they've never really experienced before. And then also, like Cheryl said, it really is difficult for them because it's not a workbook. It's not something that's a structured, which is designed for learning.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that we all read. It's written for American or English speakers. So we're really excited. They've already had some good talking points about Homegoing, but they're excited to discuss it with other community members. So it's a great opportunity for them to showcase how much English they've learned and, you know, use their English to express their ideas and their opinions in a book club conversation. So,
All right. I want to go back to that. I just a reminder, you're listening to Education Matters here on WGTD, your gateway to public radio. My name is Guida Brown, and my guests today are Cheryl Hernandez and Cassie Christensen of the Kenosha Literacy Council. So the book, are these sort of the star students who make it through a book and can have that discussion?
Yeah.
Again, I'm looking at myself like, I couldn't read a book in Spanish. I would be freaked out. And then the whole discussion, I mean, even if I got it, even if I could read it, I'd be like, I missed so much of it in, you know, the retelling. I can't imagine being able to do that.
So these are definitely our most advanced English language learning students. And it's usually the class that they're kind of doing as they're getting ready to transition to the next thing. So maybe they're getting ready to start a academic program at the technical college. So that they're really, this is kind of their graduating capstone kind of moment to be able to be in the book club. Since it is probably the most advanced experience that they're going to have with us at the Literacy Council. And they take usually about 12 weeks to read the book.
Okay.
So I think, you know, you and I, when we have a book club, we might find out what the book is the month before, and mm-hmm. we cram it in a couple of days, or we read the book pretty quick. But they spend a lot of time on the book. They read together in class. They read independently. And then they discuss each week what they've read. So I think that process really helps them kind of understand the story and what's happening, because they do take a little more time reading the book. Mm-hmm. And then I also think the book discussion part of it is a whole nother challenge that you kind of mentioned. Yes, maybe they've read the book and they understand it, but then they're in this circle with English-speaking folks, and some of them they are familiar faces, some of them are people they don't know, and so that can be a really nerve-wracking thing.
Well, and just people talking all at once. Like, that's really one of my barriers with Spanish. I can halfway read it, but I can't understand when people speak it because it's so fast, and, mm-hmm. you know, and that's only one person. So then there are two people, and I know we in the Midwest tend to speak a little fast anyway.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so, I mean, I just can't even imagine that process. It's just so brave and brilliant. And I just, again, I love it. So when you have those book club meetings, those discussions, mm-hmm. how many people are showing up for those?
It depends on the book, but we've definitely had 30-ish people.
Wow.
So it's a good, healthy discussion.
And they're done in person now?
Yes, they are. We did some on Zoom, but we're back to in person.
Well, and one of the things that you did it on Zoom, and I know, you know, thank goodness we're almost through those changes in our lives. But one of the things that you had done on the Zoom session that I attended, I feel like it was maybe Educated, the book by mm-hmm. Tara Westover, because I seriously wanted so many people to discuss that with me. You did breakout sessions. So then we went into our little groups. Do you do any of that in the big in-person stuff? No,
we haven't done that in a big book discussion. But it's something we should maybe think about trying, because it worked out really well in the Zoom rooms, because it gave it a little kind of a warm up, right?
Yeah,
to help
people
feel a little comfortable when you're in a smaller group.
And
so it did work out really well.
What have been some of your best book discussions?
I believe To Kill a Mockingbird was a huge
turnout. Of course
turnout.
It would be. Love that book.
Yeah, that one was a big one. It might have been closer to 50 people at that one. So it was a really good one.
I think Michelle Obama's Becoming was a really popular one that the students really liked reading too.
Yeah, and I think it's always unique. It's always a unique discussion because our students are coming from a different perspective, right? So they're really seeing the story through a different lens, and it brings some insight to the discussion. So I think as an American, you can go there and get a little bit of a different viewpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. So how many, what's the mixture? Because you said sometimes the students go into the book club and they see people they've never even seen before. Is that, and I know you open them up to people, right?
Yep,
again,
it's open
I showed
to the
up.
Community.
So tell me about that. Tell me about how people get involved with that. I mean, I know from my own perspective, it was one specific book. I just want to hear other people's perspective on it.
Mm-hmm.
So do people generally, like, is your book club, like, the thing that people go to, like my book club through the Kenosha Women's Network is, or where, this is the next book for the Literacy Council, I'm going to read it and show up?
I think we have some people who absolutely kind of follow and want to know, you know, when we're at the book discussion, what's your next book? What are you going to read? So we do have some of those people. We have some that just come because they were interested in that book, or they got invited by one of our volunteers or something. I think because the books are spaced out a little more. There's not as many people kind of following, like, what's the next book. But we definitely have some people who've been to multiple ones.
And what's the mixture of people to students? I mean, general population to students.
Yeah, so we usually have about 6 to 8 students at the book discussion, okay. I think in an average group. And then everyone else is a volunteer or somebody from the community.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
I just love that idea. I love book clubs. I mean, I could make my whole life just attending different people's book clubs. If only they would invite me, you know?
Well, you're always on your guitar, so we'd love to have you.
I'm going
to
start following it a little bit better. Because, yeah, I didn't get my hands on a copy of Homegoing, but I really want to read that one, too.
I think it was a great experience for our students because it really brought a new perspective to them and helped them learn about a part of American history that most of them had no idea about. So I think it was a great learning experience for them, and I'm excited to hear them talk about it, and I know they're going to be really proud of themselves too when they finish that. So
how do you choose? I know Homegoing is the big read, so that's an easy choice, but how do you choose the books that you're going to read?
We typically let the students vote. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the general process is where they research different books, so we give them, you know, the top 20 books of this year or whatever. They look online and look at a lot of different options. They narrow it down to a top 3 and they do a vote. And so it's really their input as to which book we're going to be reading.
Cool.
So we always encourage them to try something new, you know, kind of step outside of your comfort zone. So it's interesting to see what they pick.
Wow. Very cool. All right. So I know you have a fundraiser coming up pretty quickly after this interview. Tell us about that and how you arrived there.
So we have Return of the Feud on May 4th at UW Parkside. It's May 4th, May the 4th be with you. So we have a little bit of a Star Wars space theme going on for this year. So we're encouraging people to kind of come and show off their Star Wars gear if they have it, but totally not required. And it's a Family Feud style trivia competition, so just like the Family Feud TV show, and it's a lot of fun. I know we've done a spelling bee in the past, and people really have to study a lot for that one, so this is nice. You don't have to study, you can just come and have fun and guess at the answers. So
I love that your fundraisers are always costume themed. My life revolves around dressing up in costumes, so that's fascinating. The Family Feud, who are you asking those questions of? Like, do you do a survey, or how do you find those answers?
So,
as a contestant, I've always wondered who answered that.
We have the questions that we've just found through like Google searches and things. They have questions out there. So the 100 people in America that they're surveying, I'm not sure.
You don't know. Oh,
but
okay.
Sometimes the questions it's not always the most logical answer. But I know that this country is bigger than that country, but you have to think about what
100 people say. Yeah, they're not necessarily factual, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and not Midwest, too, right?
Right.
I mean, they're like, who knows? I can't think of any of the specific questions, but I remember one that was like snake and spider, and we were all like, you know, scorpion or, you know, whatever, and it was like, no. So, yeah,
you really have to think of, although,
it's very much Family Feud, and what a it's a lot of fun. I know I've been there the last 2 times, and it is a lot of fun. So, all right, so back to your student anthology. Tell us how you pick those topics. Tell us about the students who are writing them. You know, before we get to that, I do want to know, I know you said they're from all different countries. Mm-hmm. What is sort of the breakup of your students?
Yeah, so about 80%, actually the last couple of years, closer to 90% of our students are English language learners. So that means they're students from someplace else in the world that have moved to Kenosha and made Kenosha their home, and now they're learning English. And then the other 10 or so percent are American-born English-speaking folks who are coming to improve their reading and writing skills. So they didn't finish school, they didn't learn to read as well as they needed to when they were in school, and so now they're coming back to us, and hopefully they'll kind of go on to get their GED in the future, but we're helping them get some of those basic reading and writing skills set so that they can do that.
So unrelated specifically to your students, I think that there should be a test, right? And I don't mean like a test that they're doing in high school, but in the nonprofit world, we serve so many people, and the expectation is that they can read and understand English. And I just taught a class, a group dynamics class, and I had a student in there who absolutely could not. Everyone else had finished a 20-question quiz, and he got maybe 5 questions answered. Mm-hmm. And dawned on me, he's having a very difficult time with this. But I feel like we have so many people who are incarcerated who are at that level. We serve a lot of people who are at that level. Is there a test that says, you know, I can read and write this? Something just anyone can do? Like, I know in my world, there's a test to see if you have a substance use disorder. Is there a test to see if you need assistance?
I think not that that I'm aware of. We certainly do standardized tests with the students to know what level they are at coming in. But I don't know about something that just kind of the general community could kind of use. Okay. It would be a really good thing to look into.
Well, it would be, because I feel like, you guys need to get that up on your website, because I feel like people, it's same with having a substance use disorder almost, right? If I don't know about other people and what your skills are, then I think my skills are average or normal. Or I've also worked with people who think they have no skills, and I'm like, what do you mean?
Your
skills are, I remember this 100 years ago, but somebody was reading me the newspaper, and she's like, I don't know how to read. And I was like, you just read me, you know, all these ads in the newspaper. Of course you know how to read. Mm-hmm. And that expectation that she had, that she was somehow so much more delayed than other people. So yeah, you should get that on your website.
I think it's also a thing, you know, folks oftentimes have really good coping mechanisms. Mm-hmm. As adults, they've kind of developed really good ways around it, because it's not necessarily something they want other people to know about, or that they maybe would get a little defensive about in a situation if somebody said, can you take this test so I know if you know how to read?
Right. Well, and that's why I'm thinking, again, that sort of standardized thing that I can find. And I tried to do it with actually a reentry program for our jail, our detention center, where I was like, how do we know? Far too often, and this is across the board, far too often we just hand people a folder of paperwork and say, absolutely, here you go, good luck. And, you know, if the out of the gate, I can't even read what you handed me. And so that was like, to me, that's almost the very first thing. We are very much a literal, you know, we think that everyone's going to be at some level of literacy. Mm-hmm. And if they're not, then everything else you're trying to offer is pointless. And I don't think we give enough attention to that. And so even before treating you for your substance use disorder, treating you for your mental health disorder, treating you for your physical health disorder, we have to know, can you read and write? Can you read and write?
Absolutely.
And I know that a lot of the tests have racism built into them. And so there's an expectation that I'm not going to take that test because I'm not going to be able to pass it anyway because you deliberately made it impossible for me to pass. And so in the process of trying to do some reentry stuff with our incarcerated population, I had found all of that stuff and was like, goodness, how do we test that level? And I get what you're saying, but if I could test my own level on the side and then decide, yes, I need more help, and no, I'm at a decent level, or yeah, I need more help, but I can do it on my own, versus going to the literacy council, I think that would be a really valuable skill opportunity for people to do it on their own.
I agree. And we have the benefit of being able to help the folks who come to us because they're ready, because they've recognized that they need some help. And so they're taking a really big step to come in and say, I need help. I can't read as well as I need to. I want to be able to fill out this form at work. I want to be able to send emails. I want to be able to read the note my child's teacher sent home. And so we can help them from wherever they're coming in at.
So just a reminder, you're listening to Education Matters here on WGTD, your gateway to public radio. My name is Guida Brown. My guests today are Cheryl Hernandez and Cassie Christensen from the Kenosha Literacy Council. So back to the anthology. I think one of the really cool things about the anthology is seeing where the students come from. Mm-hmm. And so tell us a little bit about that, about that population, again, who's willing to write, what they write, how you pick those topics for what they're writing about.
Yeah, so I think Cassie usually chooses the topics, and we just try to change them up each year so there's a little something different to write about. And we haven't always done topics. It's something we started a few years ago, and we found that it really helps kind of direct the students and the volunteers and when they're writing. And so we get stories that are a little more unique and interesting as opposed to everyone kind of writing about their Christmas celebration or their family, right. Which are wonderful, too. But this gets
people
being a little more creative. I think one of the great things about the anthology, too, is the students. We kind of keep the writing at the students' level. So they go through a process where they write the story, they do brainstorming, they write the story, and they do some revising. But we intentionally kind of keep in some of their grammar errors and things like that so that they can see and the public can see where that particular student is. And then if they have the opportunity to write another story with us the next year, it's a huge thing for them to see how much they've improved. Look, last year this was my story, and now look what I've written. So that's a really great experience. And I think it's great for the students to see each other's stories because they find commonalities between each other. I think often we focus on how different we are from each other. Well, you're from that country and I'm from this country. We couldn't have, you know, things in common. I think a really good example of that is in this year's story, one of our students from China wrote about when she learned how to ride her bike. So her father was teaching her how to ride her bike. And it just struck me as that's the same experience so many of us have with mm-hmm. a parent teaching us to ride a bike and encouraging us and motivating us. And her story is so similar that we can all relate to it, even though, you know, she learned in China and we learned in the United States.
Right, right.
So I think that's always one of kind of the interesting things about the anthology, too.
So you said some of the students, there are, I'm just looking at this, there are 52 stories, I think that's, yeah, which is a lot. I mean, just managing that. And this is your 21st year?
21st, yep.
So can you go back and see all the, do you have a copy of every single one for the last 21 years?
We do. So we have our little bin of history at the Literacy Council, and we keep track. We have all of the anthologies, and then we also send one to the library system, so people can actually go and check them out at the library in the Kenosha Authors section. The students get excited about that because we show them that they're a published author in the library. So
that's so cool. This is such a great opportunity for them. Yeah. So you said some of the students can come back the next year and write another story. How often does that happen?
I'd say it's probably pretty regular. You know, as Cheryl mentioned, our students are typically with us for about 6 months, but we invite students to write stories. So maybe they've just exited our program, but they want to contribute to the anthology, then we invite them to contribute a story. So they might have stories a couple of years in a row. For some students, they've only had one story, so it just depends on the makeup of our student population at the time.
And do you give them a guideline as to how long the story should be, or how does that work?
No. We don't talk to them about how long it should be, but I do think that we kind of know the students' capabilities, mm-hmm. and so we try to push them a little bit. So if we get a very short story, we encourage them to answer a few more questions and add a little bit more to the story. But they're all coming in at different levels. So there are some stories in this book that are written by very beginning-level students. Sometimes we even have the students kind of dictate the story mm-hmm. to us a little bit. So they might tell their volunteer mm-hmm. the story, and the volunteer writes it, and then they write it, just because their own writing abilities aren't quite up to writing independently mm-hmm. yet. But then there are other students who are more advanced who go with it.
I think the other really impactful part of this is how timely it is. So mm-hmm. there's a story from the student from the Ukraine.
Yes.
And, you know, this is from the end of 2022. So that was really like, you know, it's not a fully bound book that's going through an editing process that you have to, that all of a sudden it's old now already. Yep. So that's really impactful, right? That I can tell my story of something that just happened or that really made a difference in my life really recently.
Mm-hmm. So the story from Ukraine, I think she had just come to the Literacy Council probably a month or so before we were beginning the process to write the stories for the anthology. And she actually had written a different story first, but then she came back and kind of said, this is something I really want to share. Like, I have this story in my heart and I want to be able to share it with people. And I think it was really part of her way to process everything that's been happening to her and her family. So her and her daughter were able to come here from Ukraine, but they obviously left during a very troubling time. And her story talks about being able to help some other families as they were leaving Ukraine. She was able to let some other families stay in her house. She was able to help a family get their car fixed so that they could kind of carry on in their journey to get out of Ukraine.
So in the anthology, again, it shows where everyone's from. Mm-hmm. So what is your typical client or student? Who is that? Typical. Yeah.
So about 60% of our students are women. So lots of women, moms and things that are kind of learning about the community so they can support their families. And about 60% of our students are from Spanish-speaking countries. But we've definitely seen a lot more diversity recently. So many students coming from Ukraine. We've also had some students from Afghanistan. And so this year, in particular, the last few months have been we've seen a lot more diversity in the countries that the students are coming from.
Okay. And is there a cost? Do they have to pay for services? How do they get services?
Yeah, the students don't have to pay to receive student services, so anybody can come to the Literacy Council. We do have a registration fee, and students do pay for workbooks, but it's based on their income and their ability to pay. So if they can't pay or they don't pay, we just carry on and serve them anyways. But there aren't any charges for any of our classes or tutoring or anything like that.
How long, you said about 90% are English language learners. Mm-hmm. So they're coming into this country. How long are they generally in the country before they access your services?
It's a huge difference.
Yeah. I mean, we've had some students that come in after 5 years of living here. Other students are literally getting off the plane the week before or the day before even I've had. So I think a lot of it depends on whether or not they have support here already. Mm. So if they have family or friends that are aware of us, they're like, hey, as soon as you get off the plane, we're going to go register you for English class, versus a student who maybe comes here and is just starting to look for resources. So it just depends. Every student's a little bit different, but we've seen a wide range. We've also had students who are going through like a naturalization process, so they've obviously been here a lot longer, so they could be up to 20 years having lived here before they start
right.
that process.
You help with that too, don't you? Mm-hmm. The naturalization process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I've seen the pictures.
Yeah, we offer classes about 4 times a year, and the students come to the class, and within 8 weeks, we help them learn all the information to pass the test, the civics portion of the test, and we and then also look at the application and things like that so that they know where to file their application and stuff.
Mm-hmm. How long does it take me to learn English at a level that I feel competent?
I think it all depends on the learner.
Yeah.
And they do come in at varying degrees, right? So some students will come in and they have a college background in their own country. Or they studied English in their own country. Mm. And they get here, you know, They've really got the foundation. Now they need an opportunity to practice. And we have other students that come in and they are maybe even illiterate in their own language or they've never seen the English alphabet. So they're really uh-huh. starting from that basic level. And so obviously those journeys would be different for each student.
And so is there a time limit that you say anybody has to have?
No. Absolutely not. We try to make sure the students are always working towards specific goals. So we work with them, Cassie works with them to develop goals, and they have short-term and long-term goals. So a short-term goal might be, I want to talk to the cashier at the grocery store, or I want to go to the bank and talk to them in English, right? It could be a basic, easy thing like that. And then longer-term goals might be to get a promotion at work or to start a program at Gateway. So as long as they're kind of always working towards those goals and showing progress, then we want to keep
them. And they set their own goals. Yep. So somebody could come. I know that I was a volunteer a long, long time ago, way before you guys were there. Mm-hmm. And I had a person, I tutored her. She just wanted to improve her English skills. She was an native English speaker. Mm-hmm. She just wanted to improve her reading skills.
Okay.
So is there a typical person who comes in? Like, are you seeing that, or are you mostly saying, I have to be able to learn English because I want to get a job or get a promotion, or what's more typical of that?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you ask somebody just generally, what do you want, why are you coming here, they'll say, oh, I want to learn English, or I need to learn to read and write. But when you ask them why, right, what's the most important thing to you, then kind of think about that, and then we can start coming up with smaller goals to lead to a bigger goal. Other students maybe come in and they have a goal in mind. GED is a very common one. And we have to break that down a little bit because it does take a while to get a GED. It's a very intimidating thing. So we have to break down how we can serve them and then help them transition into Gateway's GED program. And for our English language learners, sometimes they come in with stories. Excuse me. I had a mother who came in, and she had recently had an experience where somebody was yelling at her child, and she didn't have the English skills to communicate with that other adult. She couldn't, you know, defend her child in any way, and so that immediately made her come in the next week and sign up for English classes. So you really get different stories from different students.
Wow. I know I remember one time, Cassie had an English-speaking student who wanted to improve their reading and writing skills, and their reason after she had talked to them for a while was because they wanted to be able to read their own cards. So people would send them birthday cards, and they wanted to be able to read those cards. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just having those conversations with the students to find out what's important to them and then using that as their motivation.
Yeah, those referrals then are so very important, right? Because if I sit home and think, man, I'd like to read this card myself, mm-hmm. and then don't know where to go.
Absolutely.
And I feel like that isolation of, like you said, you don't feel comfortable telling anybody mm-hmm. I can't read well, or gosh. Mm-hmm. So your volunteers, mm-hmm. what's your primary source of getting a volunteer?
So most of our volunteers, and certainly not all of them, but most of them are retired folks who are coming back looking for a wonderful, meaningful way to give back their time. And so that's where a lot of our volunteers come from. But we also have folks who work, and this is just something that they're interested in. Certainly not all of our volunteers have teaching experience or have taught in the past. Most of them don't speak another language, so sometimes people assume must be something
absolutely.
You have to know how to do. You have to know how to speak another language,
right.
Or you have to have some teaching experience, but that's not required. And actually, we encourage our volunteers, if they do speak the student's first language, to not use it during tutoring.
Right.
They might, outside of tutoring, outside of class, they might have some conversations or share some words in there.
So aside language. From that initial 14-hour training, mm-hmm. what's a volunteer commitment? How long do you expect me to show up every week or whatever?
So we try to be really flexible. We try to have different opportunities for different volunteers. We have a drop-in tutoring program that all of our volunteers kind of start with. And so we tell them, you know, some volunteers come maybe every other Saturday, and that's okay. Like, we'd love that. If you can commit 2 or 4 hours a month, we'd be happy to have you. Other volunteers come, you know, maybe 10 hours a week.
Oh, okay.
So it really depends on their schedule and what they want to commit to. Cassie has some also, once the volunteers have kind of been with us for a while, they have the opportunity to lead some small group classes. And so Cassie does some additional training for those folks, and they can lead a class that's usually 6 to 8 weeks long. And so that's a lot of the volunteers like that, because it's kind of a clear commitment. This is the beginning of the class and the end of the class.
All right. So we're going to wrap up here. Cassie, tell us again how somebody can reach you if they wanted to be a volunteer.
Sure. They can always check out our website. It's kenoshalit.org. And on there is all of our contact information. So you can find our phone number, which is